Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugiak,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechamut.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Dave Waldron. This week on AK, our favorite segments from 2016. Traditional dancers that bring Bollywood to Alaska, an Alaskan museum that leaves you hammered, and sharing a name with the spaceman, Alaska's own David Bowie. We take a look back at a few of our favorite AKs from 2016. First up, from April 15th, a story about an unusual group of dancers who brought a taste of Bollywood to Alaska. Here's Alaska Public Media's Ellen Lockyer.
It's dress rehearsal time at the Alaska Performing Arts Center. The Atwood Theater is empty, but on stage, dancers dressed in long, shiny purple skirts and colorful blouses twirl for a few minutes, then stop. One dancer speaks to the group, then gestures from the stage to the sound man in his booth. It's the afternoon before their performance, and the music and lighting cues have to be just right. Despite the traditional Hindi music, the woman is speaking Russian, because Maori dance group hails from the town of Petrosavosk, a community closer to Finland than it is to Moscow. Sanjay Talwar, with the Asian Alaskan Cultural Center, says an India-Russia connection is not uncommon.
We have lots of filmmakers, they go over to Russia to shoot Hindi films, and it's about a little bit over 3 hours flight from New Delhi to Moscow. And our India culture in Russia is pretty big.
Neil Bergava, president of the Cultural Center, says residents of Mother Russia's subarctic climate are eager to embrace spicy, color-drenched Indian culture.
Bollywood films are very famous in Russia.
As if on cue, a singer picks up the microphone. She's singing a song in Hindi. Talwar says he's impressed by the accuracy of how the singers and dancers are interpreting his cultural heritage. Now, with sound and lighting to their liking, the dancers regroup and begin their intricate movements to an unmistakably Indian beat. And Maori represents India well, Talwar says.
And have the movements and have the expression, you have to kind of know the Hindi words, the lyrics, and they are doing a pretty good job.
Dancer Anastasia Basante says she's been with Maori for about 19 years and that she's learned everything she knows about Indian dance with the troupe and from the leader, Vera F. Grafova.
Because she really has a God gift. I can't explain it any other way. Just she felt it from her childhood that she can dance, that she feels music, that she just can't live without this art and culture.
Maori has been teaching and performing dance for 3 decades and has traveled the world.
Another of our favorite AK stories of 2016, an unusual museum in Haines, hits the nail on the head for people with a liking of the simple and the unusual. From August 26th, here's Alaska Public Media's Jillian Rogers.
You know, it easily could have been Saws.
That's Hamer Museum founder, Dave Paul.
In fact, we won't even go there because I've got a big Saw thing going on too.
He says he didn't have a clue that a tourist attraction would be the end game of his Hamer collection, which he started decades ago. The museum features 2,000 hammers on display, and that's not even all of them.
But, you know, I think the combination of the variety, the collectability, you know, I had about a hammers for my own use before I even had any thought of collecting. And then the history really was what wrapped it all up. And there seems like there's a lot more history in a hammer. There's a lot of history in saws too, but the hammer was man's first tool. It's the king of tools. That's what they say.
The museum nestled in a cozy spot just off Main Street and guarded by a 19-foot replica hammer opened in 2002. It became a nonprofit a couple of years later. Since then, Hamer Museum t-shirts and trinkets emblazoned with cheeky sayings like, "Nailed it," and "I got hammered at the Hamer Museum," fly off the shelves in the summer months. On a busy Wednesday, cruise ship passengers crowd into the small space and marvel at the collection.
Hi. Welcome to the Hamer Museum.
Oh.
We are happy to be here.
Well, good.
And yeah, in case you missed that, MC Hammer is playing in the background. Stop. Hammer time. Go with the flow. To enhance the atmosphere on Wednesdays, the museum's busiest day of the week, they play Hammer-related songs and MC Hammer. Gloria and Mark Olson are perusing the collection. They're cruise ship passengers from Battleground, Washington.
I love it.
He said, I'm going to take hundreds of pictures here.
How can there be this many different types of hammers?
Most of the specimens belong to Dave Paul, but some have been donated from around the world. On average, the Hammer Heaven sees about 5,000 visitors each summer. Between admission sales, it's $5 to get in, t-shirt profits, and grants, the museum makes enough to keep Reed employed for about half the year. The quirky venue pretty much markets itself, but a January spot on the quiz show Jeopardy definitely helped boost the museum and the town. In the category Offbeat Museums, the $200 clue was Haines, Alaska's Museum of This Tool features exhibits on handle making and five ways not to hit your fingers. The guy who buzzed in got it wrong. He said knife. But folks in Haines were bursting with pride after their 15 minutes of fame. Haines has the only museum dedicated to hammers in the United States. A quick Google search reveals that there are other exhibits around the nation that offer displays of tools, but nothing touches the Hammer Museum here.
Our final favorite AK story of the year comes to us from Anchorage. In January, Alaska Public Media's Zachariah Hughes was reeling from the loss of one of his favorite singers, the legendary punk glam rocker David Bowie. Hughes Googled his name, expecting to find info and songs from the late singer. But what he found instead was another David Bowie, living in Anchorage. We talked to the man who shared such a famous name.
Like a lot of 15-year-olds growing up in Connecticut, there was a stretch of time where I was obsessed with David Bowie. Time takes a cigarette. After the singer's death, I was curious if he'd ever come to Alaska, but I got sidetracked when Google informed me that there is a different David Bowie, still living very close by, and in fact, extremely receptive to a telephone call out of the blue.
Like I tell my students every semester, I don't expect you to end up pronouncing my name right. It's fine. I will answer to either. But just so that you know, it's Bowie.
Bowie studies language, particularly the subtle regional differences that shape vowels, like that O in the middle of his name. That's an alphabetic anomaly that's particular to his upbringing in southern Maryland.
In most of the United States, it's Bowie. But in Maryland and eastern and central Texas, it's Bowie.
Besides that name, Bowie bears little resemblance to Bowie. He's 45, has glasses and spiky brown hair, and is wearing a silver bow tie. The floor of his office is covered with collapsed heaps of linguistics books. He was born in 1970, just on the cusp of the English singer's rise to American fame. Bowie says his parents weren't hip enough to even know that they were consigning their son to a difficult few decades of jokes, chuckles, chortles, jests, and I presume a good amount of bullying, too. Bowie didn't listen to the music, even resented it a little bit. He was going to change his name at 18, but then, like many young Americans, his identity flipped when he got to college.
And suddenly sharing the name of a celebrity was kind of fun. I'm just like, you know what, I'm going to own this.
Not only did he start listening to Bowie, he started caring, developing opinions on whole albums and eras of the performer's career.
Which is my favorite Bowie period? I think it changes. Absolutely no pun intended.
Bowie studied linguistics in college. The way that he tells it, it was sort of an arbitrary decision that gradually morphed into an academic career. By graduate school, he was drawn to the ways that dialects differ within religious communities.
Looking at actually Amish teenagers when they do the Rumspringazite, where they go out into the community, and looking what happens linguistically.
That project never quite materialized, but the line of inquiry brought him to Utah, then Florida, and eventually Alaska. Since then, he's developed an interest in how English has transformed in a place that it's really only existed for about a century.
There's a few scattered things here and there, but very little really on Alaskan English, and vanishingly little on pronunciation, which is my focus.
His dream is to one day have a dialect atlas for Alaska, something that could take decades or even outlast him. Bowie, like Bowie, is a bit of a rule breaker, albeit with phonemes and syntax rather than genre and gender bending. He cares deeply about sound, less for the technical specifics of a sentence or a consonant or a song note than the effect that it has on the listener.
At some level, I just kind of enjoy music to match a mood. I mean, right immediately before we had this interview, I switched Pandora on and I was listening to very, very angry old school rap because that really worked for the moment.
And in that, Bowie is maybe just one little vowel sound away from a performer who always aimed to leave an impression.
Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Ellen Lockyer, Jillian Rogers, Zachariah Hughes, and Sean Dugan. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Dave Waldron, and Happy New Year.